know, you go into any, it could be a grocery store. It could be our local Costco here. There is, I mean, this is, they're huge stores, right? I mean, they are, it goes 300-400 feet down in one aisle. And literally one aisle of that is filled with chips and sweets and salt and fat stuff. You go through the store, and if you were to really pick out the food that is healthful for you, you don't even fill up your basket.
If you look at the three leading ingredients, right, in those foods, just look at the label.
Mm-hmm.
They'll change order, but it'll either be a fat, a sugar, or a salt. And they'll just change order. And much of the food that we're eating today has no real nutritional value.
And so it's up to, in this case, if we look over the long term for parents who have small children now, to create a situation at home, at least, where they are not being fed food that is either mass-produced, simply junk-type food, highly processed food, and stick to situations where you're in charge of programming your child's brain to respond to normal food. So fruits, vegetables, real food, and not fulfilling or treating children all the time with sweet, salty, or fatty snacks.
Once you realize that our behavior is becoming conditioned and driven, and it's not just our behavior, it's the behavior of our kids, that has very major policy implications.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're laying down that behavior for a lifetime. Does that have implications for how the food companies should change? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
What about government policy? Greater disclosure, more education, school lunches, what we in the state subsidize with our tax dollars with regard to farm subsidies? Absolutely. I mean, if you're a parent and you try hard as you can when the children are at home, but they go off to school and they're eating, you know, fat, sugar, and salt.
Right.
You're up against a formidable force.
And a lot of the schools, we have some in the Ottawa area, at least, where for the high schools, you still have the vending machines with chocolates and chips, and they're going for lunch, getting their soda and chips and chocolate. Cafeteria is still serving fatty foods and pizza and french fries. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. But as you've mentioned, if you've already laid down pathways in the brain that respond to all this stuff, you can't really control yourself.
You say that there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're serving kids fat, sugar, and salt, aren't you laying down that neural circuit?
No, that's what I'm saying, is that if you have a child that has gone through and hasn't had those circuits laid down,
right?
Then the I'm not saying have that available in the school. What I'm saying is that, you know, if you're going to take your kid out somewhere and you're going to, as a treat, do that, have a pizza or have, there's nothing wrong with one time to do that. It's when it becomes or has been part of their life, their entire lives, where that's the foods that they've been eating. There's a specific difference between that and having eaten foods that don't lay down that pathway as strongly.
But you used the word treat.
Mm-hmm.
So you already characterize certain foods as, you know, well, that's a treat. You should want that more. Right? And the question is, how do you, I mean, it's very hard.
Yes.
It's not that I, you know, the answers, you know, I mean, are not easy. But if certain food is viewed as a treat, as a reward, you want it more. How is that going to set up future wants and future desires?
Very interesting point. That's a very good question. I see the point that you're making with regards to how we're all susceptible.
We're all susceptible. Our brains are more vulnerable than we thought. I mean, you see it as a physician.
Mm-hmm.
You understand this.
Yes.
You know, there are stimuli in our environment that can capture our attention. Is this really different than alcohol or drugs or tobacco or, you know, sex for some people? Your brain gets captured. It's vulnerable. I thought when I started writing the book that I would end up in the world of physiology and endocrinology and bariatric surgery. Where the journey took me was into what makes us human,
mm-hmm.
how our brains get captured by certain stimuli, and how that locks in our attention. It arouses us, and we act in order to release that tension. And we find ourselves in this constant chase of, you know, activation, release, with no real reward in the end.
It's I guess, as you've said, where when you're talking about, and I was reading a bit about what you said with how when you did I think it was an experiment with yourself, where you had two chocolate chip cookies and you said, I wasn't going to have them. And you thought about them throughout the day. At least that was my understanding, until you finally had one of those cookies.
You know, what's fascinating is, you know, how the mind works. Remember when, I don't know if you ever played with them, they were these finger cuffs. You put your fingers in them, and, you know, and the harder you pulled,
yes,
the harder they were to get out.
Right.
In some ways, once your brain gets activated, your attention gets locked in. You know that inner dialogue sometimes you have with yourself, boy, that looks good. No, I shouldn't have it.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe just a little no, not now. In some ways, that only increases the reward value.
Yes, it does.
Of this. So we in some ways, we need to take, you know, the more we worry about food, the more we think about food, right, the more we put food on the pedestal, and the more we try, the harder it becomes, because then it only increases the reward value. I mean, if you think you're deprived, if you're trying to white knuckle it, you know, that's the stuff of obsessions. That's the stuff of cravings. So how do you reduce the focus on food, but not just let it, you know, the habits and the neural circuits that are already laid down, that impulsive reactions to food? Am I just eating those chocolate chip cookies nonstop?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I mean, if I worry too much about it, I only want it more. But if I don't worry at all, I just kind of eat them. So it's a very fine line. In some ways, you know, that's why having, you know, just eating in a non-chaotic, organized way, in a planned eating, knowing what you're going to eat, when you're going to eat, what you're going to eat, be comfortable with that, have food rewarding, but in a planned way, so you don't constantly get bombarded and cued all the time.
And so this will take effort from not only the individual, but also from fast food restaurants, in some ways government regulation, because let's face it, in Canada, it's the government that pays for healthcare. So if you've got growing numbers of people, and you can see down the line that you're going to have more and more rates of obesity, heart disease, diabetes, the onus is to prevent. And in some ways, if the understanding is, as you've mentioned, that there are reward centers in our brain that are really difficult to change once they become established, the environment has to be something that has to be controlled a little bit more, because the individual is not able to control that entire environment. They can't control fast food restaurants. You can't control the manufacturers that produce the food. You can't control the grocery stores that sell all this stuff. But if there's some regulation, that may help in some small way contribute to establishing at least a bit of control for that person to at least implement some of those changes.
You know, I'm a strong believer, now that we know that our behavior is becoming conditioned and driven, does that mean the food industry has to change? That absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean government has to do more? Absolutely. But just because our behavior is becoming, you know, our brains are being hijacked, doesn't mean we can't take steps to protect ourselves
mm-hmm.
from, you know, that constant bombardment with cues. Now, some of my colleagues in the obesity community, in the research community, think that that's unrealistic. They say, David, you're putting too much onus on the individual. I mean, if you try to protect yourself and you're constantly walking down the street and you're bombarded with fat, sugar, and salt, and your peers are doing it, and it's become socially acceptable to do, it's very hard to erect the barriers
mm-hmm.
so you don't do it. I still think we need to give people the tools
right.
to protect themselves. The most important thing, and the reason I wrote The End of a Reading, was to be able to explain to people, finally, you know, those who have a hard time controlling their eating, it's not their fault. No one ever explained to them that their brains were being hijacked. No one ever gave them the tools to control their eating. That was what was important to me in writing the book.
So now that, so say we get these tools established and people now have them, I would hope that then that starts the ball rolling for people to then say, you know, okay, we're doing our bit. What are you guys doing to be able to do your side of things as well? Because, I mean, yes, people can incorporate these tools. And I would hope that the behavior that changes with that, as I think has been reported in New York City, where they're listing on the menus the fat, sugar, salt combinations or what's in the foods, that people are choosing foods that are lower calorie, that the restaurants are responding to accommodate those choices. So where people now are having an influence on what food is being made available. Is that the kind of thing that has to start to happen?
Absolutely. Labeling on menus, I will, you know, I commend the city of New York. You walk in, I was there, you know, I looked at this muffin, you know, the other day, it was 600 calories. I didn't pick it up.
Holy cow. And people don't realize that muffins, that how many calories are in those things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
But it's going to take a cultural shift. I mean, are you ready to do that in places like Tim Hortons? Right there on the billboard with, you know, on where it lists the different types of donuts?
I would love to see the labeling of the foods. I would like, it's one of, it's been a topic of discussion in the city here, but also in general, to have labeling done, to say what's in there, to give people the opportunity to at least exert some decision-making process over the foods that they're choosing, as opposed to having no information at all.
Well, I think menu labeling is absolutely key. I agree with you.
Well, Dr. Kessler, it has been absolutely fantastic having you on the show and discussing. Is a favorite topic of mine, and I can tell from how you've talked about this that it's a very passionate area for you too.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, it's why I spent 7 years writing The End of Overeating.
Well, the pleasure has been mine.